All right, it's Dave Plyer here on 720 WGN, and welcome to our Halloween special on the eve of All Hallows' Eve. Tonight, I'm going to share two of my favorite horror radio plays from the collection of Carl Amari, Suspense, The House in Cypress Canyon, and Suspense on a Country Road, all from the anthology radio series Suspense. Speaking of Carl, he'll be bringing back WGN Radio Theater tomorrow after Bears postgame from 5 to 9 with the Halloween Radio Theater. Carl, tell us what stories you'll be featuring tomorrow.
Hi, Dave. Well, tomorrow starting at 5 p.m., we have six very scary radio shows, including Mystery in the Air, starring Peter Lorre, The Sealed Book, The Whistler, Lights Out, Inner Sanctum Mystery, and Mystery House, starring Bela Lugosi and John Carradine. We also have some other fun treats, so that's all coming your way tomorrow afternoon, starting at 5 on the Halloween Radio Theater right here on WGN.
All right, thank you, Carl. Plus, we'll listen to a recording from the WGN Radio Archives with the late Eddie Schwartz and ghost hunter Richard Crow, a tradition for decades on WGN to talk about the lore of Resurrection Mary. But first, there's a new monster movie coming out next year by none other than musician and filmmaker Rob Zombie. He's been teasing images from the set and revealed a cast photo a couple of weeks ago. But there's one cast that truly is legendary, and that is the original ensemble from the Munsters TV series that aired for two seasons in the mid-1960s. Butch Patrick played Eddie Munster, and he joins us in studio. Thanks for being here, Butch.
Thank you, Dave. Appreciate it.
Well, you know, everyone knows you as Eddie Munster, but that's not where you got your start.
No, actually, it was an interesting situation. They were an agent was looking at my little sister, and I went along for the ride for a photo shoot. The gentleman had a couple shots left over in his camera, and he thought I was kind of cute and had a look about me, so he took a few photos. One of those pictures he put in his window on Hollywood Boulevard at his studio, and a director and a producer were walking by that were casting a little B-movie called The Two Little Bears, mm-hmm. noticed the picture, tracked me down through that photo.
Eddie Albert, Jane Wyatt,
Eddie
right?
Albert, Jane yep. Wyatt, Soupy Sales, Nancy Culp, and a 15-year-old wow. singing sensation, Brenda Lee.
Look at that.
So it was a great little B-movie, 6 weeks of work, and that was actually the first interview I ever went on. But before that went into production, I went on another interview for a little series that was a soap opera that was called General Hospital. So I was on the first year of General Hospital. Did the Real McCoys after that. Then from there, the Munsters came along.
Very cool. And you did some guest roles, too, like on Bonanza and Rawhide and My Favorite Martian in between all this as well.
Yeah, I was always very busy doing guest starring roles. And back then, they had a lot of old shows. And there was Alcoa Theaters and a lot of shows that aren't on today. But, I kept very busy
they
before the
you
Munsters.
Very busy, yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, at such a young age, was acting something you just wanted to do? Were your parents encouraging once you got rolling?
It wasn't really something I didn't dislike it. I didn't like it. I really had no opinion on it. It came easy. And I knew I was doing something special, and I thought it was fun, and I knew I enjoyed it more than going back to boring old elementary school. So with that in with that in mind, I thought, this isn't so bad, and I kept so darn busy that it was fun. And like I said, it came reasonably easy to me, and the rest was just somewhat history.
Well, this is pretty cool, because Universal Studios, of course, was best known from the 30s through the 50s as the home to the Universal Monsters, Frankenstein, Dracula, the Werewolf, among others. And the idea of a family about comical monsters was first suggested to Universal in the 40s, I think, by Bob Clampett, who was an animator for Looney Tunes.
That's correct, yes.
And it was nixed. Rocky and Bullwinkle writers Alan Burns, Chris Hayward also pitched a series. But it was a script by Norm Lebman and Ed Haas called mm-hmm. Love Thy Monster. And these were Leave It to Beaver guys?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Joe Colley, Bob Mosier, who created Leave It to Beaver, and also Amos and Andy before Leave It to Beaver. It's funny when you mentioned the cartoon guys, because some of the most talented and funny people in Hollywood in the 30s, 40s, and 50s were cartoonists and animators. And they would get away with things through cartoons.
Yeah.
And to this day, they all have these little secret eggs in a lot of these movies and stuff that these guys, because I did the Phantom Tollbooth for Chuck Jones when I was 14, and I learned a lot from him, and my grandfather was actually an animator for Disney. But those guys back in the day, a lot of them were behind the scenes in animation, and then they transferred over into sitcoms.
You know, you think about those creative minds. Obviously, when you're doing animation, you know, that takes a ton of creativity. So, you know, coming up with something like this seems like a natural.
Oh, absolutely. And there's such a talented pool. There's the people that do the voices, the Mel Blanks, the June Forays, Dawes Butler, all those people. And it's kind of like a subculture of comedy that was its own little clique. You know, these guys were like, you know, basically they were very, way ahead of their time.
Sure, sure. Now, there was a pilot that was done. It was done in color, which is it's still bizarre to watch that because it's a slightly different cast. And Fred Gwynne as Herman looks a little different with the makeup and everything. That didn't quite click. And I know there was like 500 kids that, and you think about this, 500 people auditioning for the role as Eddie Munster in the Munsters, right?
Yeah, and at that time I wasn't even living in L.A. I had gone back to live with my grandmother. I was in the fifth grade. To be perfectly honest with you, Bill Mumy was their first choice, and he didn't want to do it. His mother didn't want him in makeup.
Yeah.
Plus, he was working a lot. I think a series would have probably held him back because I worked a lot, but this guy was over the top busy. Then what they did is they had a kid named Happy Derman and Joan Marshall playing the mom as the Phoebe role, and he played Eddie Munster as a very rabid, angry, aggressive little kind of guy, scratchy, itchy guy.
Not a happy-feely kind of guy.
Not a happy guy for Happy Derman. And so what happened, apparently at the last minute they brought in some star power, which was Yvonne DiCarlo,
of course,
and they decided,
big movie actress.
And they decided to go with a more likable kid, more like a Beaver, more like a Leave It to Beaver type character.
Yeah,
and my agent sold them on me. So they said, we've looked at every kid in Hollywood. She goes, true, but he's not in Hollywood, he's in Illinois. I was down the street in a little town called Geneseo, not too far from here, and they flew me out, and we went over to the studio, and that was the rest was history.
And of course, Fred Gwynne and Al Lewis, they were in Car 54, Where
Correct.
Are You? So they had some good chemistry already going.
They had they were a very good comic team.
They were really something. And I think about this all the time, Butch, that the show, and I know, today, they're doing 18 episodes, 13 episodes, 22. You guys did like 30, 35 plus. And this show was only on for 2 years, and you think about the chemistry that the cast had. Mm-hmm. It's still one of the funniest shows that still stands up today.
It really does. A lot of people, and it's when you watch it, it's the obvious is the interaction with the actors and the writing. But when you go past it and you listen to the music and you listen to the editing and the sound and the Foley, and then you listen to and look, and then visually you look at the lighting and the editing and the sound and the set design. I mean, just the special effects and the sets. It was done very much like a little mini movie. The lighting, the film factor, and all that stuff and all the above, it made it look like a little quality movie.
But this was, I was going to say, Universal obviously produced the Munsters as well, but they were able to use these copyrighted designs of Frankenstein. That wasn't just something you could go out and do.
No.
I mean, Universal owned that right to do a lot of that stuff. And the makeup of the show was created and applied to the actors by makeup genius Bud Westmore, which is pretty cool. And the house. I mean, just so much of everything on here, a lot of the elements of the house and Grandpa's little, what do you call it? The
dungeon.
The dungeon was, there's parts and pieces, I think, from Frankenstein, the original movie in there, right?
Yeah, a couple things that a lot of people don't know is I always just call them Chuck and Dave. Chuck and Dave were the special effects guys. And we were doing old school special effects. We, wires, smoke machines, smoke pots, stuff that, by today would be like archaic stuff, but it was very cutting edge at the time.
Absolutely.
And each one of them individually went off to, one went to Lucas and one went with Spielberg. So they both headed up these incredible sets and stuff. So we know we had this raw talent that was doing really great things. The music, Jack Marshall won an Emmy, which I wasn't aware of. Won a Grammy. Won a Grammy for the sound.
Wow.
We had the best guest stars lined up to come and do the comedy routines. We had Paul Lynde as Dr. Dudley, hilarious. Harvey Korman, pre-Carol Burnett show. Don Rickles, Frank Gorshin.
Rickles was on everything in the 60s,
wasn't he? Yeah. I mean, literally, I mean, it was interesting to see all these great. Dom DeLuise did his first TV role when he replaced Paul Lynde as Dr. Dudley. So we had a lot going on there. Not to mention the cars. We had the cars. We had the special effects. Like you mentioned, the Westmores owned Hollywood. Each studio had a Westmore as the head. You had Wally, Frank, Monty, Bud, Purse. And then at Universal, we had Purse, Bud, and Michael Westmore was my makeup man, who his daughter now hosts Face Off.
Okay. All right.
Mackenzie.
Okay. Butch Patrick, thanks, buddy, for being here.
Thank you, Dave.
Appreciate it. Happy Halloween to you.
Bye-bye.
All right. It's 720 WGN.
Dave Fire, WGN.
So it is that time of year that the late, great WGN radio host Chicago Eddie Schwartz and Chicago ghost hunter the late Richard Crow used to discuss the most notorious Chicago ghost stories in the wee hours of the night. Leading up to Halloween and Halloween night itself. Steve and Johnny continued that tradition with Richard Crowe as well. So the father of a very good friend of mine taped some of these vintage interviews on Reel to Reel, and we were able to convert them to a digital file to present one of them to you. It's an interview from 1982 sharing the ghostly stories of the Willowbrook Ballroom, Archer Avenue, and Resurrection Mary. So from the WGN Radio Archives, here's a late legendary Eddie Schwartz and the late ghost hunter Richard Crowe.
I think the first time that we ever got together on the radio, this is one of the things we talked about. We've talked about it every time since. I doubt there's a person you ever run into who knows what you do who doesn't want to hear this famous story. This one has put Chicago on the ghostly map, hasn't it?
It certainly has. And of all the stories told about Chicago, the one that instantly grabs the attention of people, no matter where they're from in the United States, no matter where they're from in the world, they all want to hear about Resurrection Mary. Of course, hitchhiking ghosts as a genre, if you will, are well known around the world. There are hitchhiking ghosts in just about every country on the face of the globe. But when it comes to the Chicago area, the most famous hitchhiking ghost, and one that is so often encountered, is that of Resurrection Mary.
What does the hitchhiking represent, if you've been able to pin that down?
What does the hitchhiking represent? Well, I have found certain trends, certain common denominators in many ghost stories. And the idea of motion plays in so many. So we have rocking chair ghosts, the rocking motion back and forth, and the just driving along the highway, driving along the roadway, just sets up a certain mood and a certain atmosphere. Perhaps that's something to do with it, too. It just seems to fit so very, very, very well and come together so very, very well that the hitchhiking ghost, common around the country and here in Chicago, is so very, very well known along Archer primarily, either into the city or out of the city, one way or the other, passing by Resurrection Cemetery in Justice, Illinois, 7400 South Archer.
What is the date we're talking about? This story goes back how many years?
Now we can trace stories back. I've interviewed people as far back who've had their experiences back as far as 1939. Mm. And one gentleman who appeared on That's Incredible, Southwest Side Man, told me how he had his personal incident at Liberty Grove and Hall, 47th and Mozart. This was a little hall that was active in the pre-World War II days. It has since been torn down. There's just housing there. He met the young girl at the dance, danced with her over and over again. Later that evening, since she didn't seem to know anybody else in the place, and he was having such a grand time with her, he asked her, well, do you need a ride home? And she readily accepted. But they got in the car and they started down Archer in the towards the area of Justice, Illinois. When they got near the cemetery gates, she said, please pull the car to the side of the road. He did. She said, I must cross the road at this point. You cannot follow me. She suddenly jumped from the car and ran towards those gates and then disappeared before she got to them. And it's then this man realized that he had just had a most unusual experience. And the girl, of course, was none other than Resurrection Mary, the famous ghost. So this young lady named Mary, blonde in a white dress, has been encountered like that a number of times over the years, or just seen walking along the road, seen walking across the road from the cemetery, or along the cemetery fence, or in and out through the gates. And as you know, Ed, I'm sure you know that area quite well, particularly on if it's a full moon night or very a bright night, as many of the instances are of the encounters of Resurrection Mary. If you know the area, you know there's nowhere to hide. A blonde in a white dress is highly visible. Where is she going to go? And one good thing about Southsiders these days, or just people in general that are traveling by the Resurrection Cemetery area, nobody takes it passively anymore. Nobody drives by, sees something that looks like Resurrection Mary, and keeps going. I would venture to say that 99 people out of 100 are going to slam on the brakes immediately and jump out and check it out for themselves, or make a U-turn, or make some attempt to get right back to the spot, to grab that girl, find out just what's going on. It's certainly not a prankster dressing up. That is certainly not the case in these stories. And In the few seconds it takes to stop the car, turn around, come back, the girl is gone. She disappears.
The question, of course, is who was she? I can't say who is she, but who was she?
Right,
and
who was she?
And why does she prowl Arthur and Justice in the cemetery and come and go? Why does she not rest?
That's a very hotly debated topic, and you can get into all kinds of arguments in local halls or bars down along Archer. And there are a few schools of thought about that, and there are, in fact, a few candidates for the title of Resurrection Mary. Resurrection, as we mentioned earlier, is the largest cemetery in North America, according to many. There are tens of thousands of graves out there. That's tens of thousands of possibilities. Hmm. In a Polish-American cemetery, there's a lot of blonde, blue-eyed young ladies buried there. I'm sure many of whom, when they left this world, if they left this world in a young age, didn't really care to leave it. And if they did have the choice in the matter, and if they could come back, they would come back. So there's many possibilities, and I am fairly sure there's got to be more than one ghost involved. And this is based on interviewing people who were told by the ghost when she was around what her name was, where she lived. There's at least two girls coming back as ghosts. There's quite possibly three, and my list of candidates is it runs more than half a dozen, and it depends on who you talk to and depends on other factors as to various minor points and how the appearance takes place, how the ghost acts, the M.O. of the ghost, if you will, that there's a, I'm sure there's more than one ghost involved. There has to be a number of ghosts just to account for the great number of occurrences and the different variety of occurrences. We've got girls walking around the area at night, in and out through the gates. We've got the classic hitchhiking thing, the classic idea of the ghost getting into a car, and much, much more.
Kicking off the Halloween season with the late legendary Eddie Schwartz and ghost hunter Richard Crowe. All right, news is next here on 720 WGN. Alright, it's Dave Plyer back with you here on 720 WGN. You're listening to the theme from Creature Features, which aired in the early 70s on WGN Channel 9 in Chicago. 50 years ago, it premiered. It also meant that WGN overnight legends Eddie Schwartz and Steve and Johnny were going to talk about Chicago's most frightening ghost stories in and around Chicagoland with the late Richard Crowe. For hours, they lamented about the ghostly hauntings of places like Graceland Cemetery, Bachelor's Grove, as well as Archer Avenue, Resurrection Mary, Montrose Point, the old lockup at the storied Maxwell Street Police Station, so much more. Now, a new Halloween tradition that we started almost 10 years ago is with our guest tonight, Ursula Bielski. Now, she's a historian, parapsychology enthusiast, founder of Chicago Hauntings, and host of PBS's The Hauntings of Chicago. She's been writing and lecturing about the supernatural for nearly 20 years. Recognized as a leading authority, she's the author of five popular and critically acclaimed books on the same subjects. And she grew up in a haunted house on Chicago's north side. Good evening, Ursula.
Good evening, Dave. How I love to hear that Creature Features theme every year.
I know, right? It's tradition. I mean, it is tradition for us and on this station. Always great to have you with us. And by the way, if you folks ever want to jump into this conversation, we'll be talking for a little bit with Ursula about All Hauntings Chicago. You got any questions for her? 312-981-7200. That's 312-981-7200. So tell folks, because this is one of the great ghost stories for you, is how you got into all this and how you found interest at an early age.
Absolutely. So many people know I grew up in a haunted house here on the north side of Chicago. I live about 2 miles west of Wrigley Field still, and just about a block away still from the house where I grew up. And, you know, we heard every single night footsteps walking up the stairs from the vestibule of the house to the second floor where the bedrooms were. But as we were moving everything out of the house, for the first time in so many years, I realized And I had passed by this window on the landing of the staircase my whole life. And I knew the story, but I always forgot about it. There was a bullet hole in the window that looked out on the landing of our staircase from when my dad shot at the ghost the very first night with
his
servant's revolver, because they had they bought the house after it was kind of abandoned for a while. And so the first night he and my mom were in the house, they heard someone walking around upstairs, and they thought someone was squatting in the house because it had been empty for a while. Mm. So he took his service revolver from the nightstand and went to confront whoever this was, and
wow.
said he heard wow. these footsteps and shot at this you know, whatever was coming up the stairs. And that bullet hole was in that window my entire life. And when we were packing up the house, I was like, oh my gosh,
still
that's
there.
Right.
Yeah, but I mean, that's what you experienced at an early age, is you felt that presence.
Literally,
in the
my
house.
Very first memory was of being woken up by those footsteps. I must have been 3 years old when it happened, and it was something that was always there every night. So, you know, and people think, oh, you get used to something like that. Mm-hmm. Never got used to it. It was always very disturbing, and I'm sure that is why I got this great interest in the paranormal, to understand what was happening in our house. And, you know, luckily met many other people who had similar experiences, so that I was in solidarity with many, many thousands of people now over these many, many years of research.
Well, I don't want to break up the momentum here, but when we come back, we're going to start off with a story of Resurrection Mary, next on 720 WGN. It's Dave Plyer here on 720 WGN. We're talking about all things haunted Chicago with Ursula Bielski. And if you have a haunted experience you'd like to share, call us 312-981-7200. All right, this is the big one. This is the one I always look forward to hearing about, and it's one of the most legendary stories in Chicago, probably one of the oldest ones that I heard of back in the 70s, and that is, Ursula, of Resurrection Mary.
Resurrection Mary is the classic Chicago ghost story, and you know, Resurrection Mary is one of many, many so-called vanishing hitchhikers or phantom hitchhikers who have been reported all over the world for really thousands of years. You know, the story is always the same. Someone, usually a man, traveling alone, is riding along or driving along a deserted road at night and comes across this woman walking along the side of the road in a wedding dress or a party dress, and he offers her a ride home, but he can never quite get her to where she's going because she always vanishes from the car before they get to the destination. Well, our Resurrection Mary has become the most famous vanishing hitchhiker ever, because there are so many eyewitness accounts of her. These are not second and third hand stories. And what usually happens is that around 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, a man will be traveling alone along Old Archer Avenue down in the Justice, Willow Springs, Hickory Hills area. And he'll see this woman walking along the side of the road, and she's usually wearing what's described as an old-fashioned party dress, usually a white dress. And sometimes she has no shoes on. Sometimes she has what's described as dancing shoes on. And the man will pull over and offer her a lift, and she will get in the car, not really saying anything. Sometimes she'll give an address in the Back of the Yards neighborhood on the south side of Chicago. Sometimes she'll say, just drive up Archer, just drive up Archer. But the gentleman will try to get her home, but he can never quite get her there, because usually as they pass the gates of Resurrection Cemetery on Archer Road, the girl will either vanish from the car, or she will jump out of the moving car and run right through the cemetery fence or right through the locked cemetery gates. And there was a really famous incident that happened in the 1970s that actually appeared on that old TV show, That's Incredible. Remember that show that used to be on?
Yeah.
I think it was on Channel 7.
Mm-hmm.
And the police officers who were on the scene at this particular event appeared on the show and testified to what they had seen. And that is that this truck driver was passing the cemetery late one night, and I saw something out of the corner of his eye, and he looked over, and there was a woman that had been locked inside the cemetery after closing time, and she was clutching the bars, looking very much afraid. So the driver turned the truck around, and he went to the police station back down the road, and he said, yeah, there's this girl locked in the cemetery, and she looks like she's going to die of fright. You better get over there. Mm-hmm. So they called the caretaker to meet them at the gates, but when they arrived there, the girl was nowhere to be found. But the bars, these solid bronze bars that the driver had seen this girl clutching, had been pried apart and mangled as if by some incredible force, with what they described as handprints burned into the bars, where you could actually see, you know, the lines of the fingers burned into the bars and the fingerprints burned into the bars. Well, of course, thousands of people came from all over in the weeks that followed to see these bars with these handprints that people believed that had been made by Resurrection Mary, the famous ghost. And the cemetery finally had the bars cut out and repaired and then soldered them back into place. But for years, whenever you passed there, you could see that that spot where the handprints had been had become discolored again and blackened. So even from the road, it was obvious where those handprints had been and those bars had been bent. It was almost as if if Mary was, you know, defying attempts to get rid of that evidence of her.
Well, who was Mary, though? There was many Marys, wasn't there?
Many, many Marys. Yeah. That's what's so fascinating about the story, too, is that, you know, every neighborhood you go to on the south side of Chicago, it's like there's a different girl who actually lived and died, usually along Archer Avenue in a car crash, that people tie to this story. You know, the most famous story for many years was the story that Richard Crowe had uncovered, and that was the connection to Mary Bergovi, who was a factory worker who lived on South Damon Avenue, right, Damon and 47th Street, back of the yards. And she had died in a car crash right by the Chicago River in the Chicago Loop in 1934. And was buried at Resurrection Cemetery. And there were some circumstances that led people to believe that Mary Bergovi was the girl that was now being seen along Archer Avenue by Mary's old friends when they were going to and from the old Willowbrook Ballroom on Saturday nights. And then, you know, after I wrote my first book, Chicago Haunts, back in, you know, the mid-1990s, this gentleman contacted me, Frank Andrew Jasich, and he lived in Summit, just that town that's just north of where the cemetery is.
Right.
And he told me that his parishioners at St. Joseph's in Summit believed that this little girl named Anna Norkus, who had died on the eve of her 13th birthday in 1927, was actually the girl who had become Resurrection Mary. And let me tell you, I put the picture, it's a fascinating story that he told me, and he had gathered so much evidence about it. And I actually put the communion, first communion photo of Anna Norkus, because she had been buried in her first communion dress because she had just recently made her first communion before her death. I put her picture on the cover of my second book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nine men contacted me and told me that that was the girl that they had picked up on Archer Avenue, with stories, some of them as early as the 1940s, some of them as recently as when I was writing. Someone had just picked her up a couple of months before he contacted me. And I had someone, people always say, do they still pick her up? Someone contacted me about 3 or 4 years ago who had just moved to Chicago, and he was a truck driver. He'd moved to Chicago to get a route where he could go home at night. And he was passing through downtown Summit about 4 o'clock in the morning, and he saw this girl, and he said, a first communion dress with a communion veil on, and short, blonde hair, like a bob haircut, standing on the corner, kind of dancing around and laughing, 4 o'clock on a Wednesday morning. And he had contacted me and said, I just moved into Chicago, and I was wondering if there were any ghost stories along Archer.
Really?
Wild.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, as a matter of fact, there are.
Well, and you talk about dancing. I mean, just down right by there is the Willowbrook Ballroom, or was the Willowbrook Ballroom before it burned down in 2016. But that whole stretch of Archer Avenue and the Willowbrook Ballroom are all tied in to this story in some way.
Yes. You know, I with this pandemic and everything, with our tours were shut down for almost 6 months, And so I was just going crazy trying to come up with ways to keep in touch with, you know, with our followers and everything. And I started making these little documentaries. And I made what turned out to be an hour-long documentary about the ghosts of Archer Avenue, which is on YouTube if anyone's interested in watching it. But it really is fascinating, Dave. I have come to believe that Archer Avenue is what many people call a ley line. And this is like an ancient line or track in the environment that has like sacred or spiritual energies. And I think Native Americans really put down their roads or their trails over these sacred or spiritual lines of energy. Because you'll find that along these ancient trails, in Chicago, there are all of our diagonal streets, like Milwaukee, Grand Avenue, right. Lincoln Avenue, Archer Avenue. These are all the ancient Indian trails. You find a lot of paranormal activity along these, and there is no more haunted version of this than Archer Avenue. We call it the Archer Avenue Triangle, actually. That whole area, that whole like Palos Forest Reserve division and Archer Avenue, Keene Avenue, all those cemeteries that are there, the water in the area too that we think really contributes to the paranormal activity. Water is such a great conduit for paranormal activity.
The other one is, and we've gotten some text on this too, the Congress Hotel. I mean, that's something that...
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, right?
You know, it's so funny. My whole family and I, we just watched the film 1408 the other night. I think it was two nights ago. Great film starring John Cusack as this jaded paranormal investigator that checks into this room in this hotel that is so haunted that they don't let it out anymore. And I think something like 56 or 57 people had committed suicide in this room over the years. Great movie based on a short story by Stephen King. Well, Stephen King, according to legend, based this story on the Congress Hotel, which supposedly has this room that was so haunted they stopped letting it out to visitors. And in fact, there is a room, and there's been all sorts of talk about which room this is, which room this is. There is a room on the sixth floor in the North Tower that has been boarded up, wallpapered over, so that the door is no longer there. And the window washers tell us that the furniture is still in the room. So they walled up the room with the furniture still inside. Very interesting. To me, it reminded me of a story that I read, a great book that I read a few years ago called Possessed by Thomas Allen, a journalist who was a seminarian at St. Louis University when the True Life Exorcist case was going on there, which The Exorcist is based on. That exorcism was held at St. Louis University and by Jesuits from the university at Alexian Brothers Hospital in St. Louis. And this journalist, Thomas Allen, was on the football team at the time, and the exorcist had invited some of these, you know, burly seminarians to assist in the exorcism, because oftentimes the victim will have this, you know, superhuman strength. So there was a diary that was kept at that exorcism. And Tom Allen grew up and became a journalist later in life. And he wrote a book about the exorcism, this great book, including the diary in it. And he talked about in the afterword of that book that after the exorcism, they had to take all the furniture out of the hospital room where the exorcism had occurred and bind the furniture with prayer and then put it away in a storage facility so that no one could ever go near it again.
So many great stories, and I'm so thrilled you hung out with us as long as you did.
Oh, delightful as always, Dave. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Happy Halloween, Ursula.
To you too, Dave. Good night.
Good night. Tonight, I'm going to share two of my favorite horror radio plays from the collection of Carl Amari, Suspense, The House in Cypress Canyon, and Suspense on a Country Road. Our own Wally Phillips used to play them the week of Halloween so many years ago. The earliest years, from 1942 to 1962, Suspense was the most popular of the horror and anthology programs hosted by the Man in Black and produced well over 900 episodes. So written by Robert L. Richards, produced and directed by William Spear, this story called The House in Cypress Canyon is consistently cited as one of the most terrifying programs broadcast
during radio's golden age. Now, as the story goes, a young couple rents a cheap house, and in the course of unpacking and exploring, they discover a locked closet to which there's no key. Now, neither of them thinks anything of it until later that night when they hear unearthly shrieks, first coming from a distance, then coming from inside the house. And now we present Suspense, The House in Cypress Canyon.
Merry Christmas, Jerry. How's the real estate business?
Kind of early with your greeting, aren't you, Sam?
Well, I got to get them in sometime. I may not see you again until next Christmas.
If this real estate racket gets any crazy, I'll be dead by next Christmas. I'm glad you could get up here, though, Sam.
What's on your mind, Jerry?
You'll probably shoot me when you hear it, Sam, because I'm probably nuts. But doggone it, you're a detective and you're my pal, and I just had to tell somebody.
Well, you sound like it's serious.
That's just it. I don't know what it is, Sam, but... Now, listen, you know we're agents for a group of houses up in Cypress Canyon. Mm-hmm. Those places that were started before the war never got finished.
Oh, yeah.
All I got in were the foundations, just concrete and a couple of beams. Well, they've been finished now. In fact, I'm putting up the for rent on the last of them today.
What do you want, police protection from the mob?
Listen, Sam, this house that I'm talking about, it's got a number now, 2256. But before, when the men went back to work on it about 3 months ago... Well, they just started when the foreman on the job brought me a shoebox that he'd found up on a beam. And this box had a manuscript in it, a story, kind of, all written out.
Yeah.
Well, he gave me the thing. I read it. I didn't think much about it. I put it in my desk. But the other day, and I happened to drive by there, I saw the number on the house and what the house looked like. I thought of this manuscript. And, well, I don't like it. That's all. There's something funny about it.
What's funny about it?
Well, mind you, this thing was found in an unfinished house in Cypress Canyon. House that was only just started building. Well, listen, Sam, I want to read it to you if you got the time, and you'll see what I mean.
All right, shoot.
Well, here's how it begins. To whom it may concern, my reasons for setting down on paper what follows here will be abundantly clear.
What follows here will be abundantly clear to anyone into whose possession it may fall. First, let me say that I'm a very ordinary person. My name is James A. Woods. I'm 35 years old. By profession, a chemical engineer. My wife, Ellen, was a school teacher when I met and married her in Indiana 7 years ago. There's nothing in the past life of either one of us to suggest remotely any cause or reason for the dreadful thing that has invaded our lives. Our married life has been in no way different from that of millions of other average, reasonably happy, and congenial families. 3 months ago, I was ordered by my firm to take charge of a rather minor project in Los Angeles, Hollywood to be exact. The order was a sudden one. There'd been no time to secure accommodations, and conditions being what they are, the inevitable result was that until day before yesterday, we'd been living in the cramped quarters of one of those characteristic California motels. Needless to say, most of our spare time had been devoted to a search for something more permanent and comfortable, but the fruits of these efforts had been, financially and in every other way, a geometrical progression of discouragement. Until last Saturday afternoon, only 4 days before Christmas, we were driving into town on our way to a movie when Ellen saw it.
Jim, look!
What?
That sign in front of that real estate office.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
Don't you see what it says? For rent, furnished, two-bedroom house, close-in, immediate occupancy.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Aren't you going to stop?
Oh, Ellen, you know what a sign like that. It mean right out in plain sight in front of a real estate office.
Oh, yeah, but Jim...
Either they want $600 a month...
We'll never know until we ask.
But if it's any good at all, there are probably 50 people fighting for it right back there now.
Well, honey, there's no harm in trying. Now, is there?
You really want to go back?
Oh, it's probably foolish, but what can we lose?
Okay.
Oh, darling, come on, cheer up. How do you know? Maybe our luck's changed. Maybe fate's going to give us a nice new house for a Christmas present.
Come in.
Oh, we're sorry to bother you, but we just happened to see that for rent sign outside.
Oh, yeah, I hung it outside just this minute.
Is the house available?
Why, sure it is.
Let me introduce myself. My name is James A. Woods, and this is my wife, Ellen.
How to do? Wow, looks like it's fixing to rain.
Yes, so it does, doesn't it?
Well, it was one of those things. The real estate agent had just been authorized to rent the place by mail that morning, and he'd hardly had time to look at it himself and put up his sign when we drove up. It was just an ordinary little California house about halfway up Cypress Canyon, number 2256. Just an ordinary, undistinguished little house. The agent didn't know much about it. Construction on it had been stopped by the war, and it had just been completed and furnished lately. Been vacant while somebody's estate was being settled, and now it was owned by a bank in Sacramento. And the very same evening, we were struggling up the steps from the road with suitcases and boxes and armloads of clothes and all the endless bric-a-brac that people collect and never know they have until they move. Ellen began unpacking, and I began moving things around and taking the worst of the pictures off the wall, doing all the little things that everybody does when they move into a new place and try to give it something of their own.
Don't be such a sourpuss. You know, it's a roof over our heads for Christmas. That's more than we ever thought we'd get, isn't it? Now, what in the world are we going to do with those two pictures?
Why don't we just leave them where they are?
Jim, we can't. They're too awful.
Well, all right, put them in the closet then.
I can't. Both the closets are jammed full.
No, I mean the other one in the little alcove off the den. At least there's a door there. I suppose it's a closet.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That isn't a commentary on the housing problem, huh? A woman moving into a house without even knowing where all the closets are. Take the pictures down, will you, honey? Bring them in here.
Okay, okay.
All right, I guess you'll have to help me with this door. I can't get it open.
Let me see it. Well, of course you can, silly. It's locked. Where are those keys we found on the desk?
Here they are.
Nope. Not this one. Sure this one won't work. Nope. Feels like an awful solid door for a closet.
Oh, and that's one solid door in the house.
Nope, this one won't do it either. Well, we'll just have to get a locksmith up here on Monday. I'll put the pictures behind the desk, okay?
Yeah, all right. Jim, if you could just help me move this armchair, huh?
Oh, Ellen, will you let it go until tomorrow? You know what time it is?
Oh, but, honey, I'd like to get the place looking just a little
bit. Yeah, but it's almost midnight. In fact, it's exactly...
What was that?
Tomcat, I guess, out in the brush somewhere.
Sounded near. Hope that doesn't go on all night.
Well, there's much we can do about it. Come on, Ellen. I'm dead tired.
All right, Jim. All right.
Where'd you put the toothpaste, honey?
It's right in the medicine cabinet.
Oh, yeah.
Jim, we ought to get some firewood tomorrow. You know, a fire in that living room would make all the difference in the world.
Can't. Sunday.
Well, Monday, then. Jim, I think red curtains are what we need, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Mm.
You know, just at least for the living room. Anyway, the ones in there now have just got to come down.
Yeah, I suppose they do.
What do you think of red?
Well, I guess it's all...
Jim.
That's some tomcat.
Jim, it sounded in the house.
Oh, now, how could it be in the house, Ellen? We've been over every inch of the house.
Except the closet.
Now, how could a cat or anything else be in a closet that's been locked up for over a year?
Oh, I don't know.
It's probably under the house. A wildcat or mountain lion or something. I hear they have them in California.
Jim, I don't like
it. Well, neither do I like it, but there's nothing we can do about it tonight.
Well, maybe we ought to call somebody, the police or some neighbor.
Oh, don't be silly, Ellen. You act like a kid. Come on, let's go to bed, huh?
Well, all right. I suppose it is silly. Jimmy, did you lock the door?
Yeah. Can I turn out the lights now?
Yeah. All right.
Good night, Ellen. Sleep tight.
Good night, Jim.
I don't know what time it was. Perhaps an hour, perhaps only a half hour later. My mind was in that hazy borderland between sleep and a dream that's still part of consciousness. Then I was awake. Ellen, are you all right?
Yes.
Did you have a nightmare or something?
No. I heard it, too.
Well, that didn't sound like any cat.
Put on the light.
Yeah.
It seemed to be out there, Jim, in the house somewhere.
I'm going to look into this.
Jim, you be careful.
Come on. Where's my shotgun?
In the den, I think. Jim.
What?
There's something wet.
What? Wet?
Running from under the closet door. Sticky.
Ellen, don't. Don't touch it.
I had to. Jim, it's blood.
It's Dave Plyer here on 720 WGN, and you're listening to our annual Halloween radio special. Here is part two of classic radio play Suspense, The House in Cypress Canyon.
It cannot be too difficult to understand from the foregoing why I've taken the pains to set down in writing the events related here. To find in one's newly rented house a closet which cannot be opened is in itself certainly no great cause for alarm. But to be awakened in the stillness of the night by unearthly cries within that house, to find oozing from under that closet door something that is unquestionably blood, that's another matter. Perhaps others might have been braver than we. Suffice it only to say that we got out of the house in something very close to a panic, and only returned when we had the moral support of two stalwart Los Angeles policemen.
You just moved in here, you say?
That's right, officer. You can see we're still unpacking.
And the place has been empty right along before that?
Yeah, I don't know much about that part of it. You could check all that with the real estate agent, though.
Well, where is this closet?
Oh, it's right in here, officer. And the blood is...
Where? Where's the blood?
Jim...
Officer, I swear to you, there was blood on the floor less than an hour ago. I saw it.
Uh-huh.
It was running out from under that door. We heard that noise, and we got up, and then we saw it. The door was locked.
Locked, huh?
Oh, no,
Well, it seems to be all right now.
Hey, you folks aren't trying to be funny, are you?
Isn't there anything in it?
No, ma'am, there is not.
Look, officer, we're reputable people. You can call my firm. They'll tell you all about me.
There's nothing wrong with this closet. Walls are solid. No trap doors.
If you think I'm lying...
I didn't say that, mister. Oh, you probably did hear some sort of a noise, and you got a little panicky, and...
What about the blood? It got on my hand.
It isn't there now, is it?
Yes.
Where?
I feel it.
Now, you folks, just take it easy. You know, you're liable to hear all kinds of noises up in these canyons at night. You're from the east, you say?
Yeah. I'm sorry, officer.
Ah, that's all right. That's all right. If you have any real trouble, call on us any time.
All right.
Well, good night.
Good night.
Good night. Hey, you ought to have this door fixed. That's enough to scare you.
Yeah, we're going to have it fixed. We didn't say much about it after that. There wasn't much that could be said. The next day, I went down to a lot and bought a little Christmas tree and some trimmings, and we tried to pretend we were cheerful, but there was an uneasiness between us that had never been there before. Ellen seemed tired and listless. Several times during the day, I noticed her washing her hands with a brush, scrubbing the one that had touched the blood. That night, we each took a sleeping pill and went to bed. It was sometime after midnight when I was suddenly wide awake and staring into the darkness. In some way, I knew at once and instinctively what had awakened me. Ellen was not in her bed nor in the room. The nameless thing I feared gripped at my heart until I could scarcely breathe. I opened the bedroom door and started through the house, putting on every light that I could find. There was not much to search, but I searched thoroughly. The living room, the kitchen, bathroom, day, and even the garage. And all the time, the dread of looking where I knew at last I must look. For I think I knew from the very first time where I'd find her. It must have been a full minute that I stood before that closet door. Then, I opened it. She stood there rigid, her arms at her sides, her fingers extended like claws. Her hair was over her face, her eyes stared out of it. Her lips were drawn back in a grin like an animal at bay. For a moment, I was frozen with the horror of it. I stretched out my hand. Very deliberately, she turned her head and sunk her teeth until they met into the flesh of my forearm. I'd raised my hand to strike at her, but already she'd relaxed her hold and gone utterly limp. She would have fallen unless I'd caught her. I carried her into the bedroom and laid her on the bed. Strangely, at that moment, my only thought was how I might revive her. Until I saw that it was not a faint, but a sleep that she'd fallen into. A sleep as deep and heavy as though she'd been drugged. And so I left her. But for me, that night,
There was no sleep.
Jim?
Yes, Ellen?
Oh. What are you doing up so early?
Oh, I got a little restless. I'd make some coffee.
Oh. Oh, I had the most wonderful sleep. And I feel so rested.
Do you?
Mm-hmm. Jim.
What?
What's the matter with your arm?
Oh, I just hurt it.
Well, honey, it's terribly swollen. Let me see it.
No, it's all right, Ellen.
Oh, it isn't all right. You've got to see Dr. Wesley right away.
Sure, I will.
No,
I
now
will.
You promise me, Jim, that you'll go the first thing this morning. How'd it happen?
Why, there was a dog.
A dog?
Yeah, I heard him trying to chew through the screen door. I went out to chase him away, and he bit me.
Well, you mean there's all that racket, and I didn't even wake up?
No, Ellen, you didn't even wake up. It was clear to me that Ellen knew nothing of what had transpired the night before. I went to my office that morning and made a pretense of going over routine business, if only to restore my mind to some semblance of calm by the sight and sound of common, familiar things. The pain in my arm had become a persistent, dull throbbing. I made a late appointment with Dr. Wesley. He treated my arm with something of an arched eyebrow, and he said,
"Well, I've never seen anything quite like it before. That is, such a rapid onset of infection."
We conclude Suspense, The House in Cypress Canyon, after the top stories from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, next on 720 WGN. All right, it's Dave Plyer on 720 WGN, and now the conclusion to classic horror radio play Suspense, The House in Cypress Canyon.
It was dark when I left his office. I hadn't realized it was so late. Driving home, my car seemed sluggish until I saw the needle on the dashboard and realized that I was pushing it to the utmost of its speed. I was racing home to prevent something before it was too late, before the darkness had conspired against me. For somehow I already knew with certainty that it was the darkness and the night that I had to fear. The curves of the canyon seemed endless. And then the cold fear leaped up inside me. My house, too, was dark. I went slowly up the stone steps from the road, looking, praying for some sign of light or life. There was none. The house was empty. Ellen was gone. I looked with the same self-torturing thoroughness, and in that closet first of all, knowing as I did so that it was hopeless. And so, alone in that empty house, I waited, powerless and helpless now, deadened in thought and will, empty as the house itself, save only for the overwhelming sense of a terrible foreboding. For some time in the early hours of the morning, I snapped on the radio, shortwave. Why? Surely a minor question now. I only know that I did. And then I heard it.
Car 58, car 58, go to Laurel Canyon, the 4,000 block. A report that a man has been injured or attacked. Condition thought to be critical. Ambulance will follow. That is all.
I was there almost before the police, edging my way through the little crowd, staring down at the man lying there in his white uniform under the streetlight.
Yeah, the milkman, poor guy.
I heard him scream, but when I got here, just like this, there's
all
nothing
right,
on
stand
at
back, all. Stand back, stand back. Please stand back.
Well, you again.
I heard it on the radio. I live just down the road.
Yeah, I remember.
What happened?
Well, take a look. Maybe you can tell us.
He was dead. And he was lying on his back. And his throat had been torn out as though by the fangs of some wild animal. It is now Christmas Eve, or rather Christmas morning, for it's a little after midnight. I've been waiting here in the stillness of this empty house for nearly 24 hours, waiting for the end. Already once tonight, I've heard that dreadful wailing cry somewhere in the hills. I've nailed up the closet door, but that I know is childish, useless. My arm is horribly swollen and turning black, but That's nothing. It's another end that I foresee, as surely as other men foresee the rising of the sun. I hear the cry again. It's nearer now. I shall leave these notes in a sealed envelope and put it in a shoebox, in the hope that someone will give credence to these dark and terrible events, if indeed such nameless horrors can ever yield to mortal understanding. As for myself, I feel no longer any fear or even sorrow, only a desire that the end and the thing that I must do may come soon. And it will be soon, I know. Yes. For there is someone at the door.
Someone at the door. Huh. What do you make of it, Sam?
It's quite a yarn. But what of it?
That's what I thought. Now listen, that's not quite all of it. Huh? Clip to it's a newspaper clip. Listen. Hollywood, December the 26th. Police reported what was apparently a case of murder and suicide in Cypress Canyon sometime in the early hours of the morning. The victims were James A. Woods, a chemical engineer, and his wife, Ellen. Preliminary investigation indicates that Mrs. Woods was killed by the blast of a shotgun in the hands of her husband, who then turned the weapon upon himself. That she fought desperately for her life, however, was evidenced by the disorder of the room and the severe lacerations inflicted upon her husband about the neck and arms. This is the second tragedy to be reported in Cypress Canyon within 24 hours, the other being the unexplained death of Frank Polanski, a milkman.
Well, no such murders or whatever they were ever occurred, if that's what's worrying you. The clipping, well, have those things printed up, you know.
No, it's not that, Sam. That story was found in an unfinished house in Cypress Canyon. No number, no nothing, just a framework.
Uh-huh.
Now that house is finished. When I drove by it today, well, that's what stopped me, Sam, because it all fits. Now that it's finished, it is the house in the story, the same construction, the same vines and creepers on the lawn, even the same number.
So what, a guy who knows roughly what this house is going to be like writes a yarn and loses it or something?
Did he know the place was going to be listed for rental today, the Saturday before Christmas?
Oh, Jerry, coincidence. Two bits you find the guy next door is a ghost story writer or something, and he's been wondering for a year what happened to that thing he wrote.
Okay, coincidence. Well, I'm sorry I bothered you, Sam.
Don't be silly. I liked it. It's a good yarn. That the for rent sign you were talking about?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to put it up outside now.
Uh-huh. Well, so long, Jerry, and Merry Christmas again.
Yeah, well, thanks, Sam. I guess I was kind of silly, all right. Huh?
Listen, when a guy named whatever it is, Woods, with a wife named Ellen, comes in to rent that place from you, then you can start worrying.
Yeah. Well, so long, Sam.
So long, Jerry.
Come in.
Oh, we're sorry to bother you, but we just happened to see that for rent sign outside.
Yeah, I hung it out just this minute.
Is the house available?
Oh, sure it is.
Let me introduce myself. My name is James A. Woods. And this is my wife, Ellen.
How do? Wow. Looks like it's fixing to...
Yes, it does, doesn't it?
And that was The House in Cypress Canyon. Up next, another true horror classic, On a Country Road with Cary Grant. Next on 720 WGN.
Dave Plyer, WGN.
All right, it's Dave Plyer back with you on 720 WGN. Next, my favorite horror radio play of all time. It's called Suspense on a Country Road. It's from the collection of Carl Amari, who's bringing back his WGN Radio Theater with the Halloween Radio Theater tomorrow afternoon at 5 for 4 hours of frightful tales that will keep you in suspense. Now, On a Country Road is regarded as one of the classic tales of suspense because it embodies all of the things which the radio program excelled, creating the right atmosphere for true theater of the mind storytelling. So now ignore the traffic, the rain, the nearly empty gas tank, as well as those news bulletins about the escape crazy woman on the loose, and come take a drive down a lonely road with Cary Grant.
Relax, David. There's no hurry to get home.
Who can relax in this mess of traffic? There must be a wreck or something up ahead.
This keeps up, we'll get caught in the rain.
Yeah, it looks like a big storm building up, too. Hey, remember that shortcut?
Which one?
Oh, the little tarred road that goes across through Santa Marches and comes out on the other highway.
One we took last night?
Yeah. I'll turn off there and duck this pile up. I'd like to get as far as possible before that storm hits. Why don't you put out your hand?
David, don't get mad.
Well, he cut right in front of me trying to turn into that gas station.
Maybe he needed gas.
Oh. Turn on the radio, huh? Now, there.
This afternoon issued
like
warnings to all residents of Long Island to be on the lookout for Nellie Goller, a middle-aged woman described as dangerous and insane. She escaped this morning from Rescue Mental Hospital after fatally butchering a doctor, a nurse, and a ward attendant with a meat cleaver. This is the same Nellie Goller who a year ago murdered three persons on a Brooklyn street. This station
my mother-in-law.
Full description of our regular newscast, which
at least we aren't the only crazy people on Long Island. Why did you change it?
I don't want to listen anymore. Let's get home quickly, David. I don't like being out here with that woman running loose.
Uh-oh. Here's the storm. Roll up the windows.
In just a moment, Mr. Cary Grant in the first act of On a Country Road.
Amazing, Wilcox, amazing.
What's so amazing, Senator?
Your victory in the election.
My candidate's victory, Senator. The famous Autolite Stay Full battery. The battery that needs water only three times a year in normal car use. Why, everybody voted for the Autolite Stay Full battery.
You had plenty in reserve, Wilcox.
Reserve? Why, the Autolite Stay Full battery has over three times the liquid reserve of batteries without Stay Full features.
Didn't you campaign with fiberglass retaining mats?
Sure did, Senator, because every positive plate of the Autolite Stay Full battery is protected with a fiberglass retaining mat to prevent shedding and flaking and keep the power-producing materials in place.
Why, your candidate is in for life, Wilcox.
Longer life, Senator, because the Autolite Stay Full battery gives 70% longer life, as proved by tests conducted according to SAE minimum life cycle standards. So, friends, get acquainted with the Autolite Stay Full battery, the battery that needs water only three times a year in normal car use. See your neighborhood Autolite battery dealer now. And remember, you're always right with Autolite. And now, with On a Country Road and the performance of Mr. Cary Grant, Autolite hopes once again to keep you in suspense.
Put her to sleep instead of just locking her up where she can escape and kill more people.
Put who to sleep?
A woman they were talking about on the radio.
Oh, she can't help what she does. She's sick.
What good does that do the people who get chopped up with a meat cleaver?
I don't know. The laws were made before the doctors knew very much about the human mind.
I still don't know much.
Oh, I can see what it is. There's a roadblock up ahead.
What's happened?
I don't know. Cops all over the road.
David, I'll bet they're looking for that crazy woman.
Oh, I guess so.
Now, hold it a minute.
What's up, officer?
Just a checkup, folks. Anything in the back seat?
Only the blanket and the lunchbox.
We went on a picnic.
Yes, ma'am. Seen any hitchhikers?
Nope. Just traffic.
Okay. Move right along, please.
Are you looking for the crazy woman?
Move along. Let's go.
See you, ma'am.
He's busy.
What are you doing?
Listen.
All residents and motorists on Long Island are warned to be on the alert for the escaped insane woman who is somewhere on the island. She is described as tall, broad-shouldered, gray-haired, and rather heavy. She may still be armed with the cleaver. 100 men are searching the area, and they're prepared to shoot on sight. Here's another bulletin on the case, which just came in. Just a few minutes ago, the decapitated bodies of an elderly man and woman were found
here's
by
the shortcut.
Police near Center
Marches. We haven't found her yet.
This will get us out of that traffic.
I'll repeat that. The bodies of an elderly couple have just been found in their car near Center Marches on a lonely, tarred road. Police are certain they were killed by Nellie Goller, the insane woman now at large. Residents of the area are warned not to open their doors to strangers. Motorists are cautioned to stay off lonely roads and not to pick up any hitchhikers. All persons are asked to be on the lookout for this woman.
Oh,
here is her description.
They haven't
again.
Caught her yet.
Gotta turn that off, darling.
I thought you wanted to hear.
Well, that's enough.
Believed to be armed right. with the meat, please.
This shortcut will save us a lot of time.
You turned off the highway.
Sure, I told you when I did it. We've come over a mile already. Save us a lot of time.
But David, didn't you hear what the radio said about staying off lonely roads?
Well, we only have to go across the other highway. It won't take long.
You sure?
Of course. We go past Center Marches, then take the left road and come out right by the highway bridge.
Center Marches is where she just killed those two people.
Oh, no, no, no. What can happen to us while we're driving?
Hmm.
Besides, the whole island is full of men looking for this lunatic. They'll catch him.
Oh.
It's just a storm. Now, come on, quiet down. You're jumping.
Oh, I guess I'm silly. David.
What?
The gas gauge says empty.
There's still a couple of gallons left when it points to empty.
How long has it said empty?
Don't know. I'll get gas when we get across to the other highway.
David, I'm scared.
Relax, honey. Rain and wind always make you nervous as a cat.
I wish we'd stayed on the highway.
If I'd known you'd act like this, I would have.
Well, it's not my fault. Well,
it's not mine either. I'm having trouble enough just trying to see through this storm.
David, let's not fight.
Driving through these burned-out woods in this kind of weather is enough to give anyone the willies.
Oh, goodness, it got dark so fast. I can hardly see ahead even in the headlights.
There's something ahead.
Don't stop, David.
That's only a sign.
David, the crazy woman could be around here.
I'm not picking up anyone. I just want to know where I am.
Well, don't get out of the car.
I'm not. Calm down. Let's see. Center March is that way. Now, we'll take this road.
Center Marches. This must be the road where she killed those people.
Dorothy, please.
Sorry. So jumpy. Turn on the radio. Oh, this is a desolate place. We haven't even passed a house yet. Miles of woods on both sides of it.
It's so dark, we couldn't have seen one if it were there. This rain seems to be getting worse.
David, I'm just sure this is the road where that woman killed those two people.
Oh, now, stop that, Doc.
That's why the police had a roadblock by this road. The crazy woman might be any place in these woods.
But not necessarily where we are. Oh.
David, what's the matter?
Oh, that's fine. What a place to run out of gas.
Oh, no! David, you mean we're stuck here?
Yeah, I'm afraid so, for the time being, anyway. I'm sorry, dear.
That crazy woman is in the woods. She'll kill us.
She's nowhere near us.
David, quick. Turn off the headlights.
Why? Did you hear something?
David, I don't know. I don't know that I'm scared.
Our Halloween feature and my favorite classic horror radio play for the season, Suspense on a Country Road, starring Cary Grant, will continue after this on 720 WGN. All right, it's Dave Plyer back with you on 720 WGN. Here's part two of classic radio play, Suspense on a Country Road.
David, quick, turn off the headlights.
Why? Did you hear something?
David, I don't know. I don't know that I'm scared.
I guess I should have got gas.
Oh, turn off the headlights, please.
Why?
She'll see us if you don't.
We won't see her if I do.
Please, David, turn them off.
Oh, now listen, Dorothy. Don't let this silly thing get the better of you.
Oh, just look at the headlights. Poking in the darkness of nothing but wet bushes and trees. Rain falling. Please, David.
Oh, all right. There, now they're off. Feel better sitting in the dark?
Only the thunder and lightning would stop. And this rain.
Look, Dorothy, there's no sense sitting here all night. It's only a few minutes past 10 o'clock. I'm going to walk up the road a bit. There might be a house or something.
You're not going to leave me here. I won't let you go.
But Dorothy, we can't sit here in the middle of nowhere for the rest of the night.
We're safer here than out there. David, she's probably hiding in the woods. She's just waiting for a chance to kill us.
Oh, come on, Dorothy. Why should she be right where we run out of gas?
Why can't she be here? Please stay in the car.
All right.
Lock the doors from the inside.
Why? What is it?
Now she can't get in here.
She's nowhere near us.
Oh, don't be mad at me, David. I'm so scared.
But if she's out there, she can easily smash the window.
Oh, don't scare me anymore. I know I'm acting silly. I can't help it.
I know. Come, let me put my arm around you. There.
Oh, Dave.
Okay. Put your head on my shoulder.
Forgive me, David.
Well, go ahead and cry. Go on. It'll make you feel better.
Isn't there some popular music?
We're now to search for the escaped insane woman who has killed five persons in fleeing from a Long Island mental hospital. Rain and darkness are hampering the search. Over 100 police are combing the wooded area near Center Morridge's. It was near there that an elderly couple were butchered on a lonely, tarred road. In making her escape this morning, the mad woman killed a doctor, nurse, and...
Let's leave it out for a while, huh?
It's so quiet and lonely here. Wish it were morning.
Look, Dorothy, I'll run up the road. There might be a...
No,
house.
No, David, please. Listen. Did you hear that?
What? I don't hear anything.
Listen. Whatever it is.
No, I can't. It's a dog. A little dog barking.
David.
Well, I guess it's only a lost dog. Or maybe there's a house nearby.
Or the crazy one. Oh, David! She's out there!
Something hit the back of the car.
It's her!
Is the door locked on your side?
Yes. Well, what if she breaks the windows? She's got a cleaver.
In that flash of lightning, I saw somebody.
Is it the crazy woman?
I can't tell. She's lying on the road.
Can you see her? Is she still there?
Too dark to see. Have to wait for the lightning. I saw her. She's getting up now.
She'll kill us. She'll kill us.
Calm down. Please.
What is she doing?
She must have been running. She didn't see the car and ran right into it.
She's at the window, right next to you.
Oh, my Lord! Look at her! Get away from that window!
David, she's trying to get in the car.
Look at her face! And her hair! Go away!
Let me in! I'm not crazy! This crazy woman is after me! David, don't let her in.
Let me in! Don't scare her. Go away! We've got a gun! We'll shoot!
It worked. She's staring at us.
I'm warning you! I'll shoot!
David, she's coming back! Please, don't leave me out here! Please! That woman will kill me! Please! David, take your pipe. Hold it like a gun. It'll look like a gun.
Where is it? Where is it? In the glove compartment.
Here it is. Here.
Look! I've got a gun! I'm going to shoot.
She's backing away.
Keep going before I start shooting.
David, she's gone. She disappeared.
We can't get out now. All we can do is sit here all night and wait for help.
Can you see her? Where'd she go?
I don't know. She's out there, though. Probably planning on how to get in this car.
David, what are we going to do? She's the one I know.
But she didn't have a cleaver.
She must have dropped it when she ran into the car. Her face is all twisted, hair hanging down.
And she's back there looking for the cleaver now.
She'll kill us. She'll kill us.
Dorothy, stop it.
She'll kill us. David!
Tonight is bringing you Mr. Cary Grant with Kathy Lewis and Jeanette Nolan in On a Country Road. Tonight's production in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
Hey, Wilcox, what was your platform?
Why, the Autolite Stay Full battery, the battery that needs water only three times a year in normal car use.
Go on, Wilcox.
Well, we pointed out that the Autolite Stay Full has over three times the liquid reserve of batteries without Stay Full features.
Amazing.
Ah, but that's not all, Senator, because we pointed out, too, that the Autolite Stay Full gives longer life. 70% longer life, in fact. As proved by tests conducted according to SAE minimum life cycle standards. Then there's fiberglass retaining mats protecting every positive plate to prevent shedding and flaking and to give the Autolite Stay Full scintillating superiority.
How is your plurality, Wilcox?
Sensational, Senator. We got all but one vote.
Why, that's positively preposterous.
Sure is, Senator, because everybody's heard of the Autolite Stay Full battery. The battery that needs water only three times a year in normal car use. So see your neighborhood Autolite battery dealer. And remember, you're always right with Autolite.
And now, Autolite brings back to our Hollywood soundstage Mr. Cary Grant in Elliot Lewis's production of On a Country Road, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
David, she broke the window.
Get away from there. Stay out of the car.
I'm coming in. I can't stand it.
Stay out of the car. I warn you. I've got a gun.
You wouldn't shoot me.
Go away. You're crazy. We know all about you.
I'm not the crazy woman. Believe me. Let me in.
Don't do it, David. She's trying to trick us.
Listen to me, please. I've been running in this awful storm. My car is stuck in the ditch back there.
How far back?
I don't know. It seems like miles. I heard about the crazy woman on the radio. I was afraid to stay in the car alone. Let me in.
No, David.
Go back to your own car.
No! It's so dark and so lonely in this storm. I locked the doors, but I was afraid I could see things and hear things in the darkness. I couldn't stand it anymore. I got out and I ran. It's the rain. That's why I look like this. I'm not the crazy woman.
Dorothy. Maybe she isn't a crazy woman. Maybe she's just scared and exhausted.
Let me in. Please, let me in.
No, David, no. She's the one I know.
This crazy woman had a cleaver. I'm not armed. The three of us will be safer together.
No, she makes sense to me, Dorothy. We would be safer with one more person.
Oh, David, I don't know.
Let me in, please. I'm wet to the skin.
I'm going to unlock the door, Dorothy.
David.
Oh. All right. Now, get in. Make one move and I'll shoot you.
Suspense on a Country Road concludes right after this on 720 WGN. It's Dave Plyer on 720 WGN, and now part three of our Halloween feature and my favorite classic horror radio play of the season, Suspense on a Country Road.
Let me in, please. I'm wet to the skin.
I'm going to unlock the door, Dorothy.
David.
Oh. All right. Now, get in. Make one move and I'll shoot you.
Goodness. Sit down.
All right. Now, there's a blanket on the floor back there. Try and dry yourself off with it.
Oh, the darkness and the rain. There's enough to drag me out of my mind.
Well, just take it easy, lady.
I ran and ran. All I could hear was feet chasing after me, hunting me.
Do you live near here?
Farther out, near Restview. I used to live in Brooklyn. Restview is the mental hospital.
I know. I'm used to the crazy people. But not a night in a lonely place like this. Not the kind who kill people.
You live at Restview?
No. Just near there. David, we can't sit here not knowing. If we could get to a phone.
A phone?
Why? To call the police. Get some help.
No! Don't do that.
Why not? Why don't you want the police?
Oh, I do. But you'd be killed.
What do you mean?
The woman. She'll kill him if he goes away from this car. Oh,
There's a dog. You hear it? Somebody's out there.
Well, there must be a house up ahead. Maybe it's barking to be let in.
No. It senses somebody. There's somebody out there. The crazy woman's creeping around out there. Quick! Let's get away. Look out, David.
Go of me. What are you trying to do?
Start the car, quick. We'll get away.
We're out of gas.
Out of gas?
You don't think we parked here for the fun of it, do you?
Oh, such a desolate place to run out of gas. Stop barking. What does it mean? You can't just sit here. We've got to get away.
Oh, I'm not a magician, lady. I can't make gasoline out of rain.
Oh, you can't stay here the whole night. You hear me?
Let go of me. There's nothing I can do.
Try something, anything. Don't just sit there. She's scaring me, David. Stop her.
Cut it out. Cut it out. You'll have us all in hysterics.
All right. All right, I'm sorry. Look, I got an idea. Give me your gun.
What for?
What for? I'll tell you. I want it. Give it to me. Listen to me. I'm all right, but I can't sit here all night. I go crazy. Give me the gun. I'll go. I won't be afraid of the dark, the noises, the feet following me. I'll go. I promise you. But give me the gun.
No, now sit down.
Please. I'll go. I promise. I can't stand sitting in the dark like this. Can't you stop her, David?
I told you to shut up. If you don't, you'll have to get out of the car.
Not into the woods again. Oh, you're nice people, aren't you? Or do you want me to leave so you can shoot me? Is that it? We're not going to shoot you. We don't have a gun. It's only a pipe.
Dorothy.
A pipe? A smoking pipe? I'm sorry. Then you're unarmed. I'm sorry,
yes,
Dave.
Dorothy.
Why did you tell me you had a gun?
What difference would it make to you whether I'm armed or not?
I don't know you. Maybe you two are more dangerous than the crazy woman. I'll tell you what I think. I think you're the crazy woman. The way you grabbed David when you wanted him to start the car.
Dorothy, stop it. Don't excite her.
Don't excite me? Why? Do you think I'm dangerous? An old woman you took into your car, two of you, and you're afraid of me?
I'm not afraid of you. Now sit back in the seat and don't try anything.
David, storm is stopping. Maybe now is the time. The time for what? What are you going to do? You two are up to something.
Oh, shut up! My wife meant now is the time to go for help.
I did not. I meant now is the time for us to escape. David, can't you see it? She's the one. She'll kill us.
You little...
Oh, stop it. Sit back in that seat.
You haven't got a gun.
No. But I've got a knife.
David!
It's my jackknife. But it's sharp and strong, so don't try any tricks.
All right. Threaten me. Watch me while that woman is out there. All you can do is sit and wait for her to make the next move.
David, she can kill us like that old man and woman. They must have been on the same road. They were in their car, too. They must have let her in.
We'll leave, then. The three of us will walk. We'll stay close together. We'll be quiet. Anyone hiding in the woods won't hear us.
Don't get out of the car, David.
Oh, how will we find our way? It's too dark.
We'll find our way.
Look out there. The road's full of shadows.
Get her out of the car, David. She wants to kill us. Kill you!
Now, look, if you want to go, why don't you leave? We're going to stay here until some help comes.
Oh, I'd be helpless alone if I had a gun or something. Your knife.
Oh, why doesn't somebody come? Where are the police? I can't stand this.
Nobody will come. There's no one in these woods. They're burned out and deserted.
Dorothy, come on, please.
It was your idea to use this road. He wouldn't listen to me and stop for gas.
I couldn't help it. I got lost.
Oh, why don't you do something? Not just sit here waiting. Do something before we're murdered. Are you so helpless?
All right. I am going to do something. I'll go for help.
That's it. Get help. David. In her hand. I saw it in the moonlight. It glittered.
What is it?
Your wife is hysterical.
She was holding it. A long piece of broken glass, long and pointed. See? She doesn't answer. watching us. What is she waiting for?
It's from the broken window. That's where she got it.
So what if I have it? I'm not going to sit here defenseless.
She's going to attack
us. Don't be silly. It was all right for you to have a knife. Why can't I be armed for whatever may come?
Give me that broken glass.
Give it to you? You think I'm crazy? You couldn't protect us from anything.
Oh.
David, what are you doing?
Why are you climbing over the seat? What are you...
I warn you. I'm through letting my wife be terrified. Give me that glass.
Stay away from me!
Once I left the car, you were going to butcher my wife. With that broken glass.
No! No!
David!
David! I...
Give me that glass!
You're crazy! Let me alone!
Hold her, David. Hold her. Don't let her free.
Wrong. Whoa. I've got my arm.
You'll kill me.
Drop that glass.
You both gone crazy. You're trying to kill me.
Like you were going to murder us.
No, I wasn't.
Don't let her get free.
I can't hold her. Wrong.
If you have a knife, then I'll have glass.
David, hold it.
Much longer.
David, I'm not crazy. Please, believe me.
You got my throat. You're joking me.
Your knife. David, your knife.
David, you killed her. David, you killed her.
I couldn't help it. I didn't
move. Oh, you're covered with blood.
She was going to kill us. There's some lights. A car is coming. Help's coming.
Hey there, you in the car. Why are you parked here?
It's the police. At last.
We ran out of gas. The crazy woman.
What a night to run out of gas. You couldn't have picked a better spot. What with that woman running around loose?
Officer, we want to tell you.
A farmer up the road called and said his dog's been barking at something.
We caught her.
Who'd you catch?
The crazy woman. She's in the back seat, dead.
What? No, she's alive. Hurt bad, though.
She was trying to kill us.
Well, we'll get her to a hospital. You two had better come with me. We captured that crazy woman a half hour ago. I don't know who this lady is.
And that was Suspense on a Country Road. We hope you have a very happy Halloween. Top stories from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom are next.